insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, this certainly is an interesting day. All of us are focused to one degree or another. I've been kind of riveted on this, actually, when I've had the chance to pay attention to what's happening at the first open impeachment hearings regarding the impeachment of President Donald J. Trump. And wow, it's amazing to me, first of all, and I know it's politics, I know it's partisan, but sometimes, even after all these years, after observing these types of things for so long, I ask myself, whether it's in an impeachment hearing or in any other hearings, I mean, fill in the blank, I just go, is anybody really there to discover the truth? Is anybody there to actually listen, to keep an open mind, to try to really determine, is the president innocent of the charge? Has he done anything impeachable? Are there things that have jeopardized our relationships with Ukraine, with the security of the United States? Have they gone to an impeachable state? Is anybody back there really interested in any of that, or just being the junkyard dog for their party, for their president, for their cause, for their impeachment proceedings? They are just there to protect at all costs, not the country, but what they already believe or think they believe or have been told to believe. And really, are they just the junkyard dogs for their party and for their agenda, rather than being there as watchdogs for the American people? The process frustrates me. I'm a Republican. I've been open about that from the first day I was ever on the air. And I watch my party, and I'm disgusted. I watch the Democrat Party, and I'm disgusted. I look at the people that they bring forward to offer testimony, to be questioned, and I look, I keep asking myself over and over, and often much of this is in a split screen. I go, does this person asking the question even care what the response is? Are they even seeking the truth? Do they have even a slight little part of their cerebral mechanism open to what they might hear, if it doesn't reinforce what they already have been told to believe or already been told to defend? I'm not kidding you. It really deeply troubles me. And often when I see the split screen and I see somebody like Ambassador Taylor, and then I see the inquisitor on the other side or the sycophant on the other side, and I go, boy, who do you trust? Who do you trust? I just had to get that off my chest, and we'd love to hear from you and get your thoughts. You know, I really want to keep an open mind here. I really want to find out, regardless of what my personal feelings are about the president, whether I voted for him or not. It's a big deal to impeach a president of the United States, and it's a much bigger deal to convict under impeachment. It's too important to mess around with. It's too important to take lightly. It's too important to use that as a propellant for your personal agenda. It truly is. There are serious questions that need to be answered here. And even if things are negative, even if things raise eyebrows, then the question is it truly an impeachable offense? And I wonder how many people really want the answer to that. It distresses me, honestly. We'll play some of the sound from the opening statements, which honestly I thought were pretty informative. I learned quite a bit about our relationship with Ukraine. I learned quite a bit from the ambassador. I learned quite a bit from Mr. Kent, who is with the State Department. I learned a lot this morning, and I think most people could have had they actually listened and not just been, you know, worrying maybe about what damning question they could ask that again, as the junkyard dog would adequately defend their part of the fence line around all the junk inside, rather than really seeking the truth. Okay, I got to take a deep breath. If it was the old days on the Doug Wright Show, I'd be playing the meditation music right now. And I'm hoping we'll be able to turn around all of the questioning that came from the only Utahn who is on this committee, and that is our 2nd District Congressman, Chris Stewart. And I think we're working on that right now. Is that correct? Yes, we are working on it. I'd like you to hear that in its entirety. And remember, most of the members, if you're not one of the chair or something like that, you end up with about 5 minutes. So we'll try to share that in its entirety. And based on that cheerful note, I now openly, willingly, I subject myself to the news quiz of the day.
This is no kangaroo court.
And you're not a junkyard dog.
I
know
not
that
a junkyard
for sure.
Dog. Nope.
But boy, I've seen a lot of junkyard dogs this morning back in Washington.
Nope. I claim no special agenda on these news quizzes.
You're not here to indict me?
I'm
or impeach me.
I am.
I shall be impeached soon enough.
Doug Wright impeachment hearings.
That's right.
Will commence.
Early in December, I shall be impeached.
Oh goodness. No. No, I just have a few headlines to read.
Yes.
These are fun. These are lighter. Well, actually, let's start with one that isn't quite as light, and then we'll get into the more fun. Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg is homesick with the stomach bug and will not be. She's kind of working from home right now. She's 86 years old.
Yeah.
So she's off the bench right now, but still a sitting judge.
That's right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is amazing. And again, I don't care what your political background is. I don't care whether you consider yourself liberal or conservative. It's awfully hard to look at that feisty woman and not have an enormous respect for her. I disagree with her on a lot of things, and she does not reflect a lot of things that that I am, you know, maybe is the top of my agenda. But I have nothing but admiration for her. She is a spitfire. She is absolutely amazing, and I'm also very, very convinced that she is holding out as long as humanly possible for maybe the opportunity for another president at some other time to appoint somebody who is maybe a little more liberal. You can just see it in her eyes.
I know. It's a little macabre. Some people have called it a death watch. But she, I mean, if there's ever a grit will to stay in that seat for at least another 16 months or whatever, she is holding on to it. She said she will take part in decisions of the two cases being argued right now, but she will be doing it from home.
Yeah, and again, with total transparency, sometimes I wonder, you know, about some of the strain and some of the pressure. And I mean, to weigh these meaty, earth-shattering in some cases, sometimes it's kind of garden variety, but some of these decisions and the toll that must take on some of these individuals at any age, much less when you're late 80s and you've had the health issues that not only she but others, obviously. I mean, Justice Scalia, I mean, he died in office,
yeah.
You know, and I'm sure there was a little stress involved there.
Yeah, some have argued, too, the court's getting more and more power as we, or at least more influence, and their jobs are getting more and more high profile.
And I would argue that's because Congress so rarely does its job. You know, Congress is supposed to make the laws, and the Supreme Court is merely supposed to weigh the constitutionality of what the Congress and the president will do at any given time. But because of the unwillingness, I've had this conversation with Senator Mike Lee. This is just as an old weird Doug talking here. I mean, Senator Lee is concerned about this. A lot of people are concerned about it, that because of the abdication of responsibility in the legislative branch, it has forced the president or the presidents to do more by executive order because Congress isn't getting the job done. So the presidents, out of frustration or necessity, they will go with executive order, and then everybody resoundly criticizes them for, you know, doing what the legislature should do. But it's because the legislature doesn't do it. And then we hear about ruling from the bench. Why are they ruling from the bench? Well, because the legislators aren't ruling from the Senate chamber and from the House of Representatives. But other than that, I have no strong opinion on it.
All right. No opinions whatsoever.
Yeah,
good.
I'm
glad you didn't have a lot to say.
I keep
about
it
that
all to myself.
Okay. I think we have time. I've got two here. Maybe I'll let you pick. Would you rather talk about Disney or milk?
And I love them both. I'll let you decide.
All right. Well, let's do this one. Rare Disney memorabilia to be auctioned off, including Walt Disney's original planning documents, a financial plan that he hand sketched out.
Yeah.
That they're auctioning this off for Disney collectors. I think that's so interesting.
Oh, man, the Disneyana folks will go crazy on this. It's amazing what they'll spend for Disney memorabilia, especially if it ties back to Walt and even if it ties back to Roy.
Yeah, 1,500 documents are at auction. Okay, we did that quick.
We did that
quick. We can do milk real quick.
Milk.
Milk. The largest milk company in America is going bankrupt.
I saw that.
Because people aren't drinking milk anymore.
I know. What's the deal? I mean, you know, although I will admit, you know, I'm just one of those old hardcore milk drinkers. But my kids, they drink almond milk. They drink all of this. It has to be, you know, from a when I was a kid, there was an advertisement, our milk comes from contented cows. I think it was the old Highland Dairy or something that used that, and I'm sure other dairies around the country. But boy, now they want to see the proof. Is the cow happy? Is the cow, you know, does the cow get free time out of the lounge? You know, that kind of stuff. So I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting world for
me. I do not do alternative milk sources. I'm sorry to everyone out there. I've tried almond milk. I've tried soy milk. They just all taste gross. So I am a milk drinker. I'm keeping them in business. My kids are too. But,
that's right.
All right, that's our quiz. You passed.
There we go. I passed, which means, much to the chagrin of many, we shall continue on until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's go ahead and take the break. And when we come back, I'll bloviate a little bit more, and we'll also hear what was actually said by these two very important witnesses, one way or the other. I mean, whether you're for the impeachment, against the impeachment, or heaven forbid, some of us have actually kept an open mind, what was said this morning was important. That's coming up next. Okay, the impeachment hearings continue, and the good news is we're all being able to see the testimony. We've been able to hear the opening statements. We've been able to, if you can hear voice inflections rather than just reading transcripts, if you have also had the opportunity to look online or to watch traditional TV, you've been able to see some of the body language. You've been able to see how people are reacting to different things. And that's the good news. The bad news is we're seeing a lot of the same old shtick. We really are. There are, you heard me kind of bloviate about this a little earlier, but I wonder how many of these individuals last night, and I'm going to get syrupy and sappy on you here, and I don't care whether you're a religious person or not, I don't care. I wonder how many of these people last night, realizing the awesome responsibility of their nation that was falling on their shoulders today, went in the corner in the lotus position and just meditated about it. How many of them fell to their knees and prayed about this? How many people just pored over maybe some more documents just to be a little better prepared on this so they could hear and understand the truth, or they could hear the falsity? They could hear. I wonder how many of them, in their heart of hearts last night, to whatever God they believe in, whatever makes them focused a little bit better, fell to that last night, realizing the responsibility. Or they just rehearsed their junkyard dog assignment. They just went, okay, I have to protect this part of the fence, and I don't care what comes at it, friend or foe. I'm going to bark at them. I'm going to chew at them. I'm going to jump against the fence and just try to intimidate, try to defend this little part of our junkyard that I've been assigned to defend. And I don't know if that sounds Pollyanna-ish. I hope God never lets me become anything other. I'll tell you, and if this responsibility were to fall on so many of our shoulders, people who are listening right now, wouldn't you have spent some serious time going, please, whatever power there be in the universe, or whether the power be embedded somewhere deep inside of me, let me recognize falsity. Let me recognize the truth. Let me keep an open eye. Let me, first and foremost, above anything else, help me protect this great nation of ours. I wonder how many people did that last night. I fear not as many as I would hope, and I fear that many of them, in their junkyard dog capacity, just simply rehearsed over and over and over again the party line, the party talking points, and reexamined over and over and over their section of four or five lengths of chain link fence that they had to protect. Huh. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I want you to hear just a little bit of what was said. It was George Kent that actually opened the comments today. He's with the State Department. And let's hear first where he talked about the Russians and how he expected kind of attacks from those guys, but from the Americans, that caught him off guard.
It was unexpected and most unfortunate, however, to watch some Americans, including those who allied themselves with corrupt Ukrainians in pursuit of private agendas, launch attacks on dedicated public servants advancing U.S. interests in Ukraine. In my opinion, those attacks undermined U.S. and Ukrainian national interests and damaged our critical bilateral relationship.
Boy, how many people heard those words this morning? Talked about undermining critical American interests and the interests of allies. Mr. Kent also went on to describe in his opening statement his communications regarding what seems to be at least some of the epicenter of the impeachment side of this, and it was the company that Joe Biden's son participated in.
I became aware that Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma. Soon after that, in a briefing call with the National Security Staff of the Office of the Vice President in February of 2015, I raised my concern that Hunter Biden's status as a board member could create the perception of a conflict of interests. Let me be clear, however, I did not witness any effort by any U.S. official to shield Burisma from scrutiny. In fact, I and other U.S. officials consistently advocated reinstituting a scuttled investigation of Zlochevsky, Burisma's founder, as well as holding the corrupt prosecutors who closed the case to account.
Then we went to Mr. Taylor, and you know, the background on Taylor is interesting. A top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine. George Kent was a deputy assistant, is the deputy assistant secretary at the State Department. Boy, they went through their lists of credentials and the number of presidents and their families' backgrounds and so on. And sometimes, honestly, in the split screen, I look and I go, boy, who do you trust? And I have to tell you, often I would fall to these individuals that have been resoundingly criticized by many of the Republicans, especially because they perceive this as a Democratic show today. But let's just hear a little bit about what William Taylor, the top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, had to say when he basically talked about two paths, two diplomatic efforts that were underway.
I found a confusing and unusual arrangement for making U.S. policy toward Ukraine. There appeared to be two channels of U.S. policymaking and implementation, one regular and one highly irregular. As the acting ambassador, I had authority over the regular, formal diplomatic processes, including the bulk of the U.S. effort to support Ukraine against Russian invasion and to help it defeat corruption. My colleague, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent, and our colleagues at the National Security Council were my main points of contact in Washington in this regular channel. This channel is formally responsible for formulating and overseeing the implementation of U.S. foreign policy with respect to Ukraine, a policy that has consistently enjoyed strong bipartisan support, both in Congress and in all administrations since Ukraine's independence from Russia in 1991. At the same time, however, I encountered an irregular, informal channel of U.S. policymaking with respect to Ukraine, unaccountable to Congress, a channel that included then Special Envoy Kurt Volker, U.S. Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland, Secretary of Energy Rick Perry, White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, and, as I subsequently learned, Mr. Giuliani. I was clearly in the regular channel, but I was also in the irregular one to the extent that Ambassadors Volker and Sondland including me in certain conversations. Although this irregular channel was well connected in Washington, it operated mostly outside of official State Department channels. The irregular channel began when Ambassador Volker, Ambassador Sondland, Secretary Perry, and Senator Ron Johnson briefed President Trump on May 23rd upon their return from President Zelensky's inauguration. The delegation was as enthusiastic as I would soon become about the new Ukrainian president and urged President Trump to meet with him early on to cement the U.S.-Ukraine relationship. But from what I understood from the participants, President Trump did not share their enthusiasm for a meeting with President Zelensky. When I arrived in Kyiv, the actions of both the regular and the irregular channels of foreign policy appeared to serve the same goal, a strong U.S.-Ukraine partnership. But it became clear to me by August that the channels had diverged in their objectives. As this occurred, I became increasingly concerned.
Wow. When I heard that part, it's interestingly enough that there were two diplomatic channels going on, but it was implied that at least at first they were headed in the right direction or the same direction, let me put it that way. But then there was that divergence in the path where it seemed that one of these diplomatic efforts going on in Ukraine seemed to be much, much more interested in dealing with certain things that were the direct concern of the president, while the other was still working in the more traditional diplomatic arena. We'll have some more sound coming up on the other side of our news, which we need to break for right now. I'd be interested in your comments on what you have heard. We'll play all of the 5-minute segment plus that Congressman Stewart had just prior to us going on the air, actually as we were going on the air. So let's take a break at this point. We'll come back. I'll share some of the texts that are coming in. Thanks for joining us today here at KSL News Radio. Very interesting day back in Washington, D.C.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, it's great to have you along on the program today. We just got a text, and honestly, I have yet to hear Congressman Stewart's comments and what he asked of the two witnesses today before the committee. We're keeping an eye on the screens right now. We will get into some other topics. I'm very interested in a conversation we're going to have in a few minutes about redistricting, not only here in the state of Utah, but how California redistricted and won awards for it, by the way, in a real bipartisan effort in California. And Utah is kind of in the throes of all that right now. So we're going to talk about redistricting. We've got a lot of things that are on the docket today. But it's interesting, too, in this process, you can kind of tell who the head junkyard dogs are within the committee, because other members will defer their 5 minutes to them. This is usually the person that really is acting as the prosecutor or the defender or the interrogator for the party. And you can see, for example, with the Republicans, often they will defer to Jim Jordan.
I'm Nick Wyatt with the Three Things.
A Republican out of Ohio, if I remember correctly. And you can kind of tell they're the people that have organized the thing. They aren't there to hear the truth. They're there to make the case. And I understand that there might be a role for that. But boy, sometimes it just irritates me to death. But this texter just a moment ago said, Doug, I agree with Congressman Stewart. And even though I have not heard his portion, we will play that for you coming up in a few moments. I've heard Congressman Stewart say what our texter is alluding to, that impeachment shouldn't become something that happens every time the opposition disagrees with the president. But then this texter goes on to say, but man, these hearings are making me cringe when it comes to foreign policy. That's reflecting, our texter is reflecting somewhat my attitude today. As if diplomacy isn't delicate enough. As if diplomacy isn't hard enough. And especially in this part of the world. Especially when you have one of the more interesting challenges to our country, represented in Russia in this case. And then you have this country that is between traditional Western Europe and Russia. You look at this country that is trying to emerge, that just elected new leadership. This is one thing that was underscored this morning in the testimony that was given from the two people appearing before this committee, is that this is now, in a very literal sense, a young nation in its leadership. And talked about the average age of people involved, talked about the age of the president and so on. And then it was alluded to and sometimes directly brought to the surface that when you have two strains of diplomacy that are going into this, just how frustrating and how difficult that can be. And it was interesting. It's already been talked about, and I thought Ambassador Taylor laid it out quite well when he said, "When first of all, it's awkward and strange enough. The term weird was actually used as well. When you have two strains of diplomacy, one the official and one the regular and the irregular in this case, and then at least when their goals seem to be, and they were on the same path, one was on this rail, one was on that rail, all going in the same direction. But when the split came, and all of a sudden the irregular diplomacy route seemed to only have the interests of the president at heart, led by what was referred to, I love this, the three amigos under Rudy Giuliani, of all things, the president's personal attorney. Then all of a sudden, as if there weren't enough eyebrows being raised already, then there became real concern among those who were charged with the diplomacy of our great nation and the relationship we have with Ukraine, and especially with the pressures that Ukraine is under from Russia. I wanted to play this soundbite, too, where Ambassador Taylor talks about the priorities of President Trump that apparently were being led forward by the three amigos and Rudy Giuliani.
The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
It's an interesting event that is happening back in Washington, D.C. And Representative Jim Jordan, again, you know, if there is kind of a head junkyard dog here, he's it. And Jim Jordan accused the chairman of knowing the identity of the Ukraine whistleblower. And it was interesting that Representative Schiff, the chairman, came back and said something first. As the gentleman knows, that's a false statement. And then he noted that he, too, was unaware of the whistleblower's identity and would work to keep it protected. I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, hand grenades that are being thrown around in this committee meeting, and whether the pin is pulled or not, you just don't know, and it's done to get the rise. It truly is. Because Jordan went on to say, you are the only member, or actually he said this before the response from Mr. Schiff, you are the only member who knows that individual, who that individual is. Your staff is the only staff of any member of Congress that has had a chance to talk with that individual. And this was, again, Jim Jordan alleging all of this, demanding to know when the Republicans would have the chance to speak with the whistleblower. And that's when Schiff shot back. First of all, the gentleman knows that's a false statement. Most interesting, what's unfolding. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we will walk through a little bit more. And as I promised, we will switch to another topic here very shortly. But I wanted to play, and I'll be hearing it for the first time, what the questions were and what the comments were from our second district congressman, Chris Stewart. That was happening just as we were going on the air. So stay with us. More to come here at KSL News Radio. Thank you for joining us today here at KSL. And right as we were going on the air, as I've alluded to already, Congressman Chris Stewart. It's always interesting when we have a member of one of these very influential committees, the House Intelligence Committee in this case, and it's interesting to see what our representatives, or sometimes, much rarer, but sometimes our senators are saying. And so I'd like to replay, and I'm hearing this for the first time as well. I saw it pop up on the screen, and I wanted to, for my own interest and hopefully yours, this is what our 2nd District Congressman had to say when he got his time on the committee.
Mr. Stewart.
Yep. Thank you. To the witnesses, thank you. Time is precious, so I'm going to go very, very quickly.
Welcome, I think, to year four of the ongoing impeachment of President Trump. I'm sorry that you have been dragged into this. I think the sign behind me says it very well. By the whistleblower's attorney, the coup has started and impeachment will follow. But after listening for what is going on now, 4 hours and 21 minutes, after all of the secret hearings, after all of the leaks, after hearing witnesses such as yourselves give your opinions, it really comes down to this. One thing it comes down to. This is a transcript that the president has released of this phone call. There is one sentence, one phone call. That is what this entire impeachment proceeding is based upon. And I got to tell you, if your impeachment case is so weak that you have to lie and exaggerate about it to convince the American people that they need to remove this president, then you've got a problem. And the American people have been lied to again and again on this. We first heard a lot about quid pro quo. And then many people realized that was meaningless. So they said, well, let's go for the fences then. Let's talk about extortion. Let's talk about bribery. Let's talk about cover-up and obstruction, for which there is zero evidence of any of that. We heard a characterization of the president's phone call that was so outrageously inaccurate, it had to be described as a parody. And none of those things matter. None of it matters. It comes down to this. We appreciate your insight. We appreciate your opinion. But all you can do is give your opinion of this. This one phone call. Let me ask you, gentlemen, both of you have said here today, you have testified, corruption in Ukraine is endemic. Would we agree on that? Simple question. Problem is, isn't it?
It's a problem, and they're taking steps to address it.
Okay, earlier in the hearing, both of you said, use the word endemic or agreed to it. It's in the courts, it's oligarchs, it's prosecutors, it's everywhere. And I think we can also agree that that's not the only place in the world where we experience and see corruption. There's dozens and dozens of nations around the world that are steeped in corruption. Would you agree with that?
Mr. Howard say that there's corruption in every country, including ours.
Okay, thank you. And some we're clearly more concerned about than others. So in these corrupt nations, of which there are probably hundreds of corrupt individuals, hundreds of corrupt government officials, can you give me an example any time where the Vice President of the United States shows up and demands that a specific prosecutor be fired and gives them a six-hour time limit to do that? Are you aware of that ever happening any other place? I guess the answer is no. And I just think it's interesting that out of hundreds of corrupt individuals, dozens of corrupt nations, that happened one time. And it happened with the individual whose son was being paid by the organization that was under investigation. One other thing very quickly. If someone was a candidate for a political office, even for President of the United States, should they be immune from investigation?
No one is above the law, sir.
Thank you. I agree with that. I think we all would agree with that. And yet I think some presume that because some of the individuals we're talking about here were candidates, that they are immune from any questions or any investigation. I think it's absurd. For heaven's sakes, if those of us in public office, those of us who have find ourselves up for re-election or all the time as a candidate, I think we have a higher standard, not immunity from asking these types of questions. The last thing, then I'm going to yield my time. Availability of funds, I'm quoting from the NDAA in 2019. The language is specific. Availability of funds under assistance to the Ukraine, it has to be certified. And what has to be certified? Quote, for the purposes of decreasing corruption. Are you surprised that there would be questions about corruption in Ukraine and that it would be discussed withholding some of this aid that's actually required by law? That it be withheld if they can't certify that corruption has been eliminated or is being addressed?
The certification in that case is done by the Secretary of Defense upon advice of his staff in consultation with the interagency community. We were fully supportive of that conditionality, and the Secretary of Defense had already certified that conditionality had been met.
And so we agree that we should withhold funds if there's questions about corruption that have not been addressed. I'm going to yield my rest of my time to Mr. Jordan. Sorry. 18 seconds. You going to let that go? Thank you. In that case, I will yield back. Thank you.
Okay. We'll bail out of that. It's interesting. Chris Stewart has been a friend of mine for a long, long time, long before he was running for political office. I knew him as a military man. I knew him as someone who had served his country very, very well, holds records. We talked about this the other day when he was on with me, you know, flying the B-1 bomber around the world in record time. As a matter of fact, the helmet that he wore that was molded personally, as he pointed out, to his head, is still in his office. The pilot takes the helmet with them when they are through with their service. I have a great admiration for Chris. But again, how much of what we just heard, his 5 minutes minus the 17 seconds, that again, who was he going to turn it back over to? He was going to turn whatever his allotted time was over to the junkyard dog, the head junkyard dog. And there just wasn't enough time to apparently interest. There wasn't enough time to bark on the other end, I guess, and make whatever particular point. But how much time did we hear my friend, for whom I have a great admiration, how much time did we hear Chris talk versus hear something truly meaningful? Now, he asked pointed questions to reaffirm what he had just said. I get that. He gave them a chance to respond. But what, honestly, what was accomplished in that? I don't know. It distresses me. Everybody is there to posture. Everybody is there to defend. Everybody is there to make their point. Everybody is there for an agenda. And I wonder how many are really there to see, okay, look, and I can understand somebody saying, I really don't believe there is an impeachable offense here. But, boy, there's a question I would really like these guys to answer, not just to reinforce something I already believe, but it's something that I don't know. Chris only asked questions where he had already given the answers and asked them to confirm. And we see that over and over. There's nothing particularly special in that, sadly, with what we heard from our 2nd District Congressman. Somewhere in the back of your mind, isn't there a question that you wish you could ask and really get an answer to? There certainly are in my head right now. Let me just share some of the messages that are coming in right now. I wish you would play Chris Stewart's reaction after Trump was elected, before he drank the Kool-Aid. He was more intelligent then. This person said, will you be broadcasting Trump's press conference? That's above my pay grade, which is zero. So I'm not sure. We're going to have to double check on that. President Trump never does anything as a regular person. He does things differently and has since become president. This is not high crimes and misdemeanors. They are pulling at straws here. What a joke. You know, that's the legitimate question, and I appreciate that texture, because it all boils down to, have irregular things happen? You're darn right. There's no doubt about that. Has some of President Trump's eclecticness maybe crept into our foreign policy with the two tracks that were taken, the one that was regular, the one that was irregular? Yes, that is a mite unusual. Has it ever been used before? I don't know. See, that would be an interesting question. You know, Mr. Ambassador, to your knowledge, have we ever seen other presidents run a dual role of diplomacy here, one regular, one irregular? That would be an interesting question. But, of course, nobody wants the answer to that question. You know, they just want to nail down whatever their agenda is. But our texter asks the question, or poses, is what President Trump has directed or done or said, is it ultimately going to rise to a high crime or misdemeanor? Is it impeachable? Which is kind of an interesting question, because what is impeachable is somewhat nebulous and kind of comes down to whatever, you know, the House impeachment process determines and whatever the senators vote on. There's a lot of latitude here. Let me just put it that way. On that note, we are going to sit back for a few minutes. We are going to get into a different topic area. We will revisit this periodically. This person said, Chris Stewart is a Republican stalwart in every sense, party first, truth second. I've been listening to Taylor and Kent. I believe their testimony. They were there. Okay, now, that's an important point, too. If you believe their testimony, and I found it to be quite credible, I have to tell you, you know, kind of that, who do you trust? I see the split thing, and I see Kent or Taylor on one side, and I see one of our esteemed representatives on the other side, and you ask me, who do you trust? I tend to lean toward Mr. Kent and Mr. Taylor. But even if you do believe what they say, and it raises your eyebrows, again, the question is, have we risen to an impeachable offense? And I honestly don't know the answer to that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about redistricting not only the state of Utah, we're going to talk about how they redistricted or they've set up to redistrict the state of California with some people that were actually there. Stay with us.